Thinking it's about self-publishing and don't know where to start? Join the Spa Girls each week for 30 minutes of honest advice, tips and resources. I'm Trudy J and I'm here with Shah Barrett.
Hello.
Cheryl Phipps.
Hi there.
And we have a very special guest with us today, Tina Dietz.
Yay!
Yay! Say hi, Tina.
Welcome.
Hi, Tina.
Hi, Tina. Oh, very. You're a good guest. You do exactly what I tell you.
Already.
Excellent. So Tina is an expert with audio and audio marketing, podcasting, that kind of thing. And so we brought you on to have a little bit of a chat about ways that authors can be using audio in better ways, basically, and also what kind of things they could be doing or thinking about in terms of audiobooks and that kind of angle. But what we're going to do first is do a quick bio from Shah, and then we'll get right into it.
So Tina is an award-winning and internationally acclaimed speaker, audiobook publisher, podcast producer, and content marketing expert who has been featured on media outlets including ABC, Inc.com, Huffington Post, and Forbes. Tina's podcast, The Start Something Show, was named by Inc. magazine as one of the top 35 podcasts for entrepreneurs. And we are absolutely delighted to have Tina here today. Not least of all, a little bit scared, considering that, you know, she's probably looking at a podcast that could do an enormous amount of production.
We keep it casual.
Trump's production any day of the week. Yeah. Entertaining as hell. So,
but thank you so much for joining us today, Tina. It's just such a pleasure to have you. So thank you very much.
It's my absolute pleasure. And, you know, I have to tell you, though, it's just a ploy to make some really good friends in New Zealand so I can come visit. So I'll just tell you that up front.
Welcome to come visit anytime. All good.
Okay. And bring people down here, Tina. So believe me, it works both ways.
We're hoping for a colony of, like, writers, creatives, artists, and we'll kick everyone else out, and only those people are allowed in. So just FYI.
I am down with that. Let's do it. Yeah. Start the revolution now.
So let's start at the beginning, because you call your show Start Something Show, which I love the name of, and we'll talk about a little bit further on. But what I'd like to know first is your background. Like, how did you get to where you are? What got you into this area of expertise?
It's a super twisty journey. And like most entrepreneurs, it's never a straight line. It's never what you expect. But I grew up as an entrepreneur, and I was both fortunate and a little bit cursed to do that, because I learned so many skills doing that. Didn't even know what I was learning at the time until I got out into the world and realized that not everybody thought the way that I did. And on the flip side of it, you know, when I was in kindergarten, I knew things that, like, how to answer the phone and stuff like that, and I just thought everybody knew how to do that, and it was kind of a weird way to grow up. But when I got out into the world, I became a therapist to start, and then eventually came back around to being a coach and developing businesses. And I've worked with businesses in more than 20 different industries, 7 or 8 different countries now. And I always had this love of theater, love of voice. Dancing, acting, singing. I was one of those kids, all right? I was one of those drama kids. And that eventually brought me into voice acting, and I had voice acting as a paid hobby, and that's what brought me into podcasting and audiobooks. And I discovered kind of this gap that I saw between all of my colleagues and my clients who were writing books and having Amazon bestseller campaigns, and nobody was doing audio. And I got really curious about that, and found out that people didn't really know how to create audiobooks. They didn't know how to start a podcast. And that kind of led me down this lily path of being a deep specialist in this area, and haven't looked back since.
Fantastic. That's really cool. So,
cool.
It is interesting, because there is definitely a technology barrier, I feel, like, in audiobooks. But with, like, for example, when we set up the podcast that people are listening to now, it was so hard for me to figure out exactly the process that I had to go through. And I've got someone asking me at the moment how to do that as well. And I'm trying to pass on the knowledge to them, and sort of, because it was so hard for me to, it felt anyway, I mean, that was perception rather than reality maybe, but that it was going to be really difficult. And I think that's the thing that a lot of people have to overcome. And I guess having people like you around that can kind of help with that is a great thing, that we can kind of use that to, I don't know, get us into the right sphere. So So in terms of audio, like what do you think is the first step for someone? Like, do they just, is it the getting the audiobook out there, or is it
planning it prior, maybe?
Yeah, planning it prior. Like, how does someone get into audiobooks? Like, what's the first step?
Well, the first step for an audiobook is to start thinking about it while you're writing the book. The best time to start thinking about an audiobook is right around the time of when you're finishing your first draft. And this goes for fiction or nonfiction. And here's what you do. You basically, when you're about done with your first draft, you go through it, and of course, what do? You red pen it, and you want to edit it, or you've gone through that process, and you're going to send it to a professional editor, which I personally believe everyone should do. Or, you know, at least someone highly qualified in your circle who can help you with the editing process. But before you do any of that, not only should you be proofreading it with your eyes, you also want to proofread it with your mouth. And so with doing an oral edit where you read the book out loud changes a lot about what you're probably going to write, because what you catch when you read something out loud isn't the same as what you catch with your eyes. You'll catch a lot more when you read things out loud, and you'll also find the places where your inner voice and what you want your characters to sound like or your narrative to sound like doesn't match what's on the page. And that gives you a fantastic opportunity to bring that together and to kind of hone your work down and make it tighter, make it more fluid before you even get into the editing process. So that's the point where you really want to start thinking about audio, because it's going to impact how your book flows. Mm-hmm. And the more narrative, the more engaging, the more colorful that you make your work, the better off it's going to sell, the more people are going to feel like they know you, and the better it's going to ultimately translate into an audiobook.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. Because I think a fear I have is that there's maybe some things that you can get away with in a print book, but as soon as you turn it into audio, it's going to show up all the flaws in your writing. So if you're doing what you're talking about, maybe some of those flaws are going to disappear. But is that just an unfounded fear, or do you think that's very real, that things show up in audio that are not as obvious in print?
I think that you do catch things more in audio, and it is possible, right? So if you've got a book that you've published previously, because people usually do audiobooks in one of two places. Either they want to launch a new book, or they want to kind of relaunch an older book. And audio works great both ways. I've talked to a lot of authors who did their first book, they got it out there, but they really didn't know how to market it. They really didn't, maybe they didn't have the confidence, or they didn't have the budget to push the book out there. And they feel like they've lost an opportunity. And doing an audiobook is almost like doing a second edition. It's a second chance on a book. So when you get to the audiobook process, we don't tend to find that there's a lot of glaring errors or glaring flaws in the books when they come to us. But the other thing is, in audio, if we do find a mistake, we can change it. Mm-hmm. So it becomes another opportunity, because nobody is going to be sitting there, by and large, you know, comparing word for word the audiobook and the print copy next to each other. Even if you're using something like Amazon WhisperSync that will coordinate, say, the Kindle version and the audio version together, which is kind of a cool feature, a word or two or a correction of a typo or a punctuation mark, you're not going to hear that.
Okay. Yeah. So it doesn't affect the WhisperSync thing. That was always something I'd thought about too, is that the difference between, like, if you have too much of a difference between what the printed and the audio, it's going to affect that. But is there a certain amount of leeway with WhisperSync?
WhisperSync is a little touchy, but you'll get 98% of the way there. Mm-hmm. Right? It'll at least get people almost to the right sentence, even if you change, you know, 5%. But most of what we find it needs to be impacted in terms of audio editing is things like typos or punctuation. We don't really find issues with the content so much.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. So little stuff. All right, and so I'm getting distracted. I'm asking you questions that are completely off the script, because I was just interested in them. So back onto the script.
We've never done that before.
No, that's completely shocking for us. That's completely
unusual.
I know, right? So what one thing that, so if we start off thinking about audiobooks and how I always think of them as being slightly different, a separate marketing thing to the main part of like to the rest of your print and ebook sales. So can Can you just talk a little bit about that and how you see marketing for audio books?
I think it's does authors a disservice to think about audiobooks as a completely separate you market audiobooks in a different way. Marketing is marketing is marketing. I've been marketing for 30 plus years. It's kind of disturbing actually to think about how young I was when I started learning about marketing. And usually the issue with most authors is that they, and I say fiction or nonfiction, it doesn't really matter, is that they don't necessarily consider themselves experts in business or experts in marketing. And it's kind of a big learning curve. So if you can think about it in terms of building relationships or sharing or, you know, kind of, you know, getting out there and imagining your book, I say this a lot, imagine your book is a big plate of chocolate chip cookies. And all you're really doing is offering the world a bite of your cookie. And it's really easy to walk around basically saying, would you like a cookie? Mm. And if somebody says, no, I don't want a cookie, there's nothing wrong with your cookie. There's nothing wrong with your book. There's nothing wrong with you. Okay. So Whenever you start to get worried about, oh, what if they don't like it? What if they don't like me? What if they don't like this? It's okay. Just remember, say to yourself, there's nothing wrong with my cookie.
It sounds a little bit dodgy at the same time. I feel like there's another word meaning for cookie or something.
Oh, right.
No, I'm fully on board with chocolate chip cookies.
I love that. I think that should be put on a t-shirt. I love that.
That would be a conversation piece. Just walking around. There's nothing wrong with my cookie.
Nothing wrong with my cookie. I love it.
So in terms of marketing, what most authors are missing is kind of an overall plan and an overall understanding that marketing isn't all at once. Marketing is evergreen. It's forever. Your book is forever. So if you miss the opportunity to, say, have an Amazon bestseller launch, you can hear my air quotes around that.
Yes.
If you miss that opportunity, then there's another opportunity. There's another opportunity to get your book out in different ways, whether that is getting yourself on more podcasts or doing a blog tour or writing articles about your characters or getting involved in a platform like Goodreads or reaching out to people for reviews or going out to bookstores. It's endless. And it all has to be based around the things that you feel strongest in. You start where you're strongest. You start where you feel the most comfortable. And then you expand from there. So if you are terrified of being on video, like most people are, you don't start with video. Mm. Maybe you start with podcasting and you start with learning how to reach out and put yourself together a little system. I have a system I use with my clients to help them reach out and create a really friendly relationship with podcast hosts, because it's not a big pitch. Everyone just wants to be friendly and have good content and have good conversations and give value to their audience. That's really what it's all about. It's all about relationships, and audio is really no different. There's certain things that you can do with, say, your 5-minute retail sample, which is your sample of your book on Audible. You can use that about 18,000 different ways, and that's unique and that's really cool. And there's also some platforms that you can get your audiobook out onto that aren't available for your print book or your Kindle book. But most of the time, your marketing is going to involve your book as a whole, and the version of your book isn't going to matter quite as much.
Okay. That's cool.
That's good. Yeah.
So how does audio then fit within that wider platform? Like, what you sort of say, it doesn't matter for the version, you know, how you're consuming it, I guess, like whether it's print or ebook or audio. But does it just fit seamlessly into that wider thing, or is it something you should have because it adds an extra element to your platform? Or what's the kind of, where does it fit within all of that?
Well, audiobooks are the fastest growing segment of publishing, and they outsell ebooks 3-to-1. So that's the main reason to have your book turned into audio. It is a monstrous market. And where, you know, paperbacks are still the king of books. You know, more paperbacks are sold than any other type of books in the world. But audiobooks aren't that far behind that now. And the sales numbers on audiobooks this year are going to reach $3 billion.
Wow.
Wow.
It's a crazy, crazy market. And people who read audiobooks or listen to audiobooks, I should say, and I only have, I don't have worldwide numbers on this, I only have North American numbers, but in North America, the average person reads about 2 or 3 books a year, which is a little sad. Mm-hmm. But the average audiobook listener listens to about 12 audiobooks a year.
Wow.
So they, wow. There's a consumption factor that is much, much higher as well. Mm-hmm. And so we also find that when people really like a book, they'll get more than one version of the book. Mm-hmm. And because audio is the most consumable form of media, if you think about it, you can listen to audio when you can't be reading, you can listen to audio when you can't watch a video, it can be everywhere. Mm-hmm. Then it makes it a lot easier for people to consume, and that's why it's so popular. We're always on the move. We're always in our cars or at the gym or waiting for our kids or whatever we're doing. So those audiobooks, you know, have become extraordinarily popular, and it's been over 20% sales growth year after year after year for the last 5 or 6 years, and there's no sign of it slowing down. Audible, the company, has had 100 job openings or more for the last 3 years running, nonstop.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's big.
So I think it's... And how people access the audiobooks, I mean, I guess my initial perception a few years ago was audiobooks were, you know, the cassette tapes or the CDs at the library for older people, you know, sort of alongside the large print, you know, books. They were sort of housed down there, and they still are actually in my local library. But now, of course, everything's digital and we don't need an audio player. We've got our phones, you know, so it's just that accessibility.
It's also the price. Like those CDs used to be like $60 to $80, like to get one book. So that was expensive. Whereas now you get, like, I have my Audible subscription where I pay a monthly fee and I get an ebook for it's $14 New Zealand versus, you know.
Yeah. Mm.
So do you think there's a difference? Because I don't. I personally struggle to listen to fiction on audio versus non. I love listening to non-fiction. Do you think that's a common thing, or is that? I mean, clearly it's not that common because all these people are reading fiction. But what's the difference there? Is there a big difference, or is it just me?
Actually, you and I are both outliers because I also prefer to read fiction but listen to non-fiction. But we're actually, according to the numbers, a little bit in the minority for that. And fiction makes up about two-thirds of the audiobook market.
Wow. Mm. Okay.
Okay.
I wouldn't have thought that. That's interesting.
Mm. No.
Sorry, I'm just writing that down for my future. That's why there was an awkward pause. I was sorry. That's right. Must remember, am on recording. So you talked a little bit before, just we passed over it, but I'd like to go back to it. Is you mentioned that, and I tell me if I've got this wrong, but there's an excerpt that you can get from the book that goes, and so you said you can use that in 1,000 ways. Can you give us a few examples of how someone could use that, like for someone?
This is really cool. So every Audible book has what's called a 5-minute retail sample. And if you go on Audible, or even if you go on Amazon, you'll see the little sample button and you can play it and you can get an idea of what that is all about. So it's about 5 minutes long. And you can, what Audible allows, and Audible, there are lots of other kinds of audiobook platforms, places you can purchase, rent, membership programs. Audible is kind of the 500-pound gorilla in the room. So right now, Audible has a lot of control over setting standards for the audiobook industry. And what the standard they have set is that you can use up to 15 minutes of the content of your audiobook for promotional purposes. Mm-hmm. So what most people do is they take this 5-minute retail sample and they just leave it as a 5-minute retail sample. Well, we take that a bit further and we tell people to use their 5-minute retail sample everywhere. So let's say that you've got a website for your book and you've got the buttons on it that say buy on Amazon, find it on Barnes & Noble or, you know, Ingram Spark or whatever your things are there. But you can also embed that 5-minute sample. It's like listen to a sample of the audiobook. Go buy it now, like right there on your page. Okay. To use that. Another place to use it is in podcast marketing. So let's say that you are a mystery writer and you end up on a mystery podcast. You can talk to that podcast host and say, hey, I've got an audiobook version of my book. Would you like to cut in a sample to the interview and maybe have it on your show notes page? So show notes are basically like the blog post about that episode. Mm-hmm. And podcast hosts love that because it's extra juicy material to give their audience. And what they can do is they can use a link back to Audible or back to Amazon, an affiliate link that they generate. You don't have to do anything. And they are, when they push traffic to Amazon or they push traffic to Audible, because people have listened to your episode, then they might get a commission. That doesn't impact you. That doesn't come out of your pocket, but it benefits the podcast host. So you're creating a lot of really nice reciprocal relationships when you do that. And that's really, really lovely. And because you're also matching an audio format like a podcast to an audio format like an audiobook, you're already talking to an audience who wants that format. So it makes it more likely for them to purchase.
Mm. That's cool. Two really great ways of using that. That's fantastic. Yeah. Other than using the sample, what other ways can people use audio with their marketing? And I'm not even necessarily talking about audio books as such, but I'm thinking ways to use audio to help with the sales of your other books. Are there things that people could be using for that?
Sure, absolutely. I want to touch on one more thing that a lot of authors don't do that actually impacts multiple places in their marketing, and then I have a couple other ideas I'll share. One of the things that we do as audiobook publishers is we have an option for our authors to do an interview with the author bonus chapter. Mm-hmm. And it's a 10-minute interview that ends up being a bonus chapter, a little bit like the notes you'll see sometimes at the end of a book for, say, a book club or discussion notes, things like that. So I personally will interview my author and create a 10-minute sample, and that is a nice bonus for them in the book, so particularly with fiction authors or for nonfiction where we're using a professional narrator to actually get to know the voice of the author a little bit more, get to know them personally. Mm-hmm. But then, because they can use that 10 minutes as a promotional piece, they can actually use that again on their website, in social media, different places to promote themselves as an author, and it gives them extra credibility because they're being interviewed.
Mm-hmm.
So it's basically a media interview, and that allows them, me as a third party, to lift them up as an expert or, you know, as someone prominent as an author.
Yeah.
That kind of helps in other people's light. Similarly, another thing that authors can do is to just get involved a bit more in discussion. So say using Facebook Live, mm-hmm. and getting some folks together around the idea of not just their own work, but the topic in general. So for example, one of my close colleagues who specializes in social media marketing for authors. Her website is thenetworkingweb.com. Her name's Catherine. She works a lot with crime writers and fiction writers and steampunk or a couple of different genres in that area. Mm-hmm. And one of her authors is a retired cop. And he knows a lot about forensics, and he knows a lot about the actual way that procedures happen in crime. So he gets on and he has a whole group where he's attracted other crime fiction writers, and he teaches them about the right way to write crime scenes and crime procedurals.
That's cool.
That's based on authentic research. So he is getting more people to buy his book, but he's also creating a fandom inside of the author community at the same time. And he does that through Facebook Live. That's a free platform. Yeah, he does that through Facebook Live inside of a group that they've created, because there's a lot of interest groups about this.
Yeah,
and that's another way to do it. Another thing that authors don't necessarily think to do because they feel like they're not quite ready to do it yet, but you can generally do it before you think you're ready. You're probably ready.
Yeah,
and that is to get involved in things like panel discussions at conferences and writers' organizations. So panel discussions are a great way. You don't have to come up with a whole presentation. You're just basically part of a discussion group on a specific topic that's relevant to you as an author based on your genre or based on your expertise. Mm-hmm. And that's something that you can apply to do either locally, regionally, or nationally, depending on where you are in the world, at different writers' conferences.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, The panel one's a good idea, actually, because you think about the presentation, and we're putting one together at the moment, and it's a lot of work. Whereas actually, a panel, you just sit there and give your opinions. It's just your opinion.
Exactly.
We just have to think of a topic. I think, so you talk about mystery writers and with the crime, and I always struggle to sort of, like, we have a lot of romance authors as part of our audience, and I sort of think, what do romance authors talk about? Do we talk about sex or something? Like, it's almost like, what do you talk about relationships or something? I'm just, you know,
you certainly could.
Yeah,
you certainly could. You could talk about how to make people actually believe that the relationship is real. There's definitely topics out there about what about non-traditional relationships in romance, or you could cover all kinds of topics related to gender, race, diversity. I mean, the romance is the top genre in the world, basically. Mm-hmm. I mean, more romance is consumed in the world than any other genre. Mm-hmm. So you've got a wide, wide range of what to talk about. And it's also talking, you know, like you said, talking about sex, you can always get something going talking about sex. Yeah. Come on.
This is true. That is true.
Okay. So one of the things we talk about is content marketing. So, and for anyone who doesn't know what content marketing is, it's kind of like a version of marketing where you're not just, it's basically providing an article or information or other stuff that's a little bit softer in terms of marketing, that's just getting yourself out there as an expert if you're someone like that. So a little bit like being on a panel discussion, that's almost content marketing. Are there content marketing ideas? You've kind of talked about it actually when I think about it, but are there other content marketing ways that you can, or ideas that you can talk about using audio? Like, what other things could people be using aside from, is setting up a podcast the right way to go for an author, for example? I don't know.
Did you say starting a podcast?
Yeah. Should other authors be starting podcasts, or should they be thinking of doing little, reader based? Should they be more reader based or other author based, or what kind of things should they be thinking about?
Well, it definitely depends on your genre, and it also depends on what you're comfortable with. Ultimately, authors want readers. Sometimes those readers, but creating circles of colleagues where you can share each other's work is a big part of content marketing. Mm-hmm. And this is often done in the nonfiction world, and I think it's something that fiction authors can learn from. There's certainly things about the fiction world that nonfiction authors can learn from. I'll touch on that in a minute. But in the nonfiction world, it's very, 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 very common, as a matter of fact, crucial, when you're launching a book, to do something called a launch team. Mm-hmm. And this is where you get your social media copy together, you get your images together, usually there's a couple different systems you can use to help people with this. And then you get your friends and your colleagues and everybody who's already kind of a fan, your relationships. And this really can involve other authors. And when your book launches, everybody pushes out this information in a celebratory form. I'm so excited. Cheryl's new book is out today. You have to read chapter 8. It's the best sex scene ever. You know, whatever the case may be. You know?
Not in the closes.
whatever the case may be, based on what's appropriate for you. And I don't see in the fiction world that happens quite as often. And it's really something that fiction authors can use, particularly if they don't already have a large following, to kind of collectively get together with other authors and help each other kind of spread the word about their books in different ways, share information, mastermind together, and then take that information and push it out on your social media channels. Trade information on different book review sites. So, you know, help each other, leave each other good reviews on Amazon and on Goodreads. A lot of this has to do with developing relationships, not just with readers, but also with your colleagues at the same time. And content marketing has a lot to do with developing those relationships that are on the inside, not just on the outside.
Okay, yeah. Would you agree with my definition of content marketing? Maybe I'm defining it wrong. in terms of when you're talking about the relationships being on the inside rather than the outside? So you mean the relationships with other authors and how you interact with them rather than external media outlets, for example? Is that what you mean?
Well, look at it this way. Every author has their own following. When you have a relationship with a friend who's an author, another author, they're often willing to promote your work to their audience, and vice versa. So it's a reciprocal relationship. So that is a facet, it's a piece of content marketing. And yes, I did agree with your overall umbrella definition of content marketing. Content marketing is, it's not advertising, it's not, you know, 30% off. You know, buy one, get one free.
Not hard sell.
That's not even, it has to do with, you know, hard sell, soft sell. It's really just the style. Content marketing is just what it sounds like. You're sharing pieces of information, not just asking people to purchase. So you may be asking people to purchase, but it's because you've added value, and then you're asking them. So you might, you know, create an excerpt of the book, and then create a call to action that is, would you like to find out what happens next? You know, this book's being released. Here's the pre-order. You know, click here to get to the pre-order. Yeah. Click here to find out more. You know, that those kinds of things. So you're right. It's softer than a straight up ad. Is what it is, and it's also in your voice. Content marketing is very unique to people's individual voices, whereas straight up advertising is a bit more cookie cutter. You know it when you see it.
Yeah. And for nonfiction, for example, so I used to be a journalist and we would do content marketing. And the way I always thought about it was that we were putting the person across as an expert. Do you know what I mean? Like whether it's yourself. So you're putting you provide information so that people will read what you're saying and think, oh, they know what they're talking about. And then maybe somewhere down the line, they'll see you again and go, oh, look, there's that book. They were really good when I read that article, that kind of thing. So if you're a fiction author and you're trying to do it in that same way, how do you, so is it by providing an excerpt of your book and people read it and say, oh, that's really good. I like that author's style. And then go down, and then they might see it again and buy that book. Is it as simple as that, or are there other ways to?
Well, content marketing is endless. There's lots of theories on content marketing. There's plenty of ways to do it. Where we usually start with marketing is going with whatever author we're working with. We have to start with their strengths. We have to start with wherever they're at. So if there's somebody who is, you know, really, really strong as a writer, but they're not a great speaker, then we want to start with seeing where we could get them to guest blog on other people's blogs, right? Because that's going to get them exposure. And so they might write a short story, right? Or they might share an excerpt of the book, or they might write an article about their process and, you know, how a certain character came about or whatever, depending on the blog and where it's focused. Maybe they submit their book for review to a book review site. There's lots of book review sites out there that you can submit your book to, and there tend to be more of them for fiction rather than nonfiction. So there's all of those things that you can do as well. So there's really fundamental things about that every author should have. Every author needs to have a really, really solid author page on Amazon. Every author needs to have an author page on Facebook. And every author, I believe, needs to have a solid a page on Goodreads as well. And these things can happen over time. They don't need to happen all at once. But because book marketing, it really is a marathon, not a sprint. It really, really is. But so much of getting the word out there, whether it's relationships with your fans or relationships with your colleagues, all marketing, but particularly content marketing, is about developing relationships so you can reach a larger audience. It's never a case of if you build it, they will come. It's always a matter of developing a relationship with with other authors so that you can share their stuff and they can share your stuff, and together you can attract a larger audience than you can on your own.
Yeah, that's really cool. And share some cookies with all these people that you're developing.
And share some cookies.
Sorry, we got completely off the topic of audio there, but it's fascinating to be able to pick your brains on the on the different ideas. So if we move quickly back to audio books or audio, I think I'm kind of fascinated, and I guess it's because we do the podcast, by the audio side of things, and not necessarily just to do with audiobook marketing, audiobooks themselves. Is there anything else, any other final ideas that you can think of to suggest to our audience about audio or audiobook marketing for them to take away with them today? Like, is there anything that must-haves or any ninja secret tips that only our listeners would know about?
Well, to be honest, most of the time when I'm in a room and I'm speaking to an audience and I ask the audience, do you like the sound of your own voice on a recording?
No.
About 80% of the room will say no.
Yes.
We don't. So I can believe it. As much as audio is incredibly useful, and usually the first thing, even the high level experts that I work with will have concerns about the sound of their voice, or if they have a strong accent, or they feel like they sound too nasal, or, I mean, if you knew some of the people who felt that way about their voice, you would be surprised at the names I would roll out there.
Yeah.
And so that's usually the first place that I find authors, if they're going to get into audio marketing themselves, and this is outside of, say, having a narrator narrate your book, mm-hmm. but your voice yourself, developing your confidence and developing an appreciation not just for your physical voice, but for the message that you want to leave people with, for your mm-hmm. own expertise. Mm-hmm. That's usually where we start when we're raising people up from, you know, this whole process of going from being an author to being an expert to being a media darling. Mm-hmm. There's an arc that we kind of walk people through. And I just invite all of the authors out there to, if you don't love the sound of your voice, it's okay. You don't have to start with audio. There's so much you can do with the written word. That's probably why you became an author in the first place. Mm-hmm. So maybe you roll into having a narrator do your book and maybe have somebody like myself or, you know, do that bonus chapter that's the interview with an author to kind of guide you through that process to make you feel more comfortable and to kind of ease you in backwards. Mm-hmm. And then you can develop your interview skills. Then you can, you know, develop... Mm-hmm. being on video, but it's not all at once, and it doesn't have to be terrifying.
Mm-hmm.
Love that.
Yeah.
It's a nice positive.
That's fabulous. Because honestly, no one likes the sound of their voice on. I mean, we didn't. And it is, and you're right, it is a, like, you should hear our first recordings. If you think we're dodgy now, like, you should have heard us the first time we were on podcast. Oh, not on a podcast. We didn't actually ever, none of those, I don't even know where those recordings are. I may have deleted them because they
did not make the light of day.
They were so bad, and you've just got to keep going and practice. So one thing I did say we'd circle back to and I forgot about was the name of your show and your podcast, the Start Something Show. I can imagine why you named it that, but can you tell us why you named it that in your own words?
Yeah, the Start Something Show and the name of my company, Start Something Creative Business Solutions, mm-hmm. Really refers to my love of creating new things. And where most people get stuck is in the process of getting started. It's mm-hmm. getting over that. It's one of two places. It's either getting started or getting finished. Mm-hmm. One of the two. But where most people stop is in that idea stage where they have the idea, but then they don't create the momentum to get things going. And mm-hmm. my underlying mission is for enough people to really appreciate who they are and appreciate the message that they have and to create something wonderful, mm-hmm. right? It might not be wonderful at first, but eventually if you stick with it, you know, you get to wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you just get started and create that momentum, and start to talk with other people and start to create a habit around it and mm-hmm. just keep getting started. Really, every day is another opportunity to start again.
Yeah.
That's
yep.
what I always recommend to people.
Yeah.
So that's where Start Something comes from.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Love it.
That's brilliant. Mm. So what's the best place for people to find you if they're interested in learning a little bit more about who you are and what you do? Is the website?
Oh, well, the website's great. And actually, my website URL is kind of long. So an easy way to get my website is to go to startsomethingpositive.com.
Startsomethingpositive.com,
and you'll go right to the website and you can explore podcasting and audiobooks, and we've got some cool things there for people, both on the blog side of things as well as show episodes. Yes. And even the audiobook production guide if people want to download that.
Oh, cool. Fantastic.
That sounds really interesting, actually.
Thank you very much. Quickly before we say goodbye, Shah, where can we be found?
So we can be found at spargirlspodcast.com, and we are all over the interwebs, and we thank you very much. We've had a lot of support, particularly on Twitter lately, of people retweeting us, and we really, really appreciate it. So thank you.
Yay. And thank you so much, Tina, for coming on with us today.
Thank you.
It's been fascinating.
It's been so much fun.
Thank you so much. I do appreciate the chance to pick people's brains.
As you can tell.
We've really appreciated you having you on here today, and thank you so much. And that is us for now, I believe, unless anyone else has anything else to add. No shaking of the head. So we will be back here again next week, same time, same bat channel. See you all.
Well, bye.